Today on Movie While As, we talk about The Old Guard, Hamilton, The Babysitter's Club, Queen, Homemade, and
Gulabo Sitabo.
It's time for Movie While As. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie While As is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Hello.
Hello.
So when do we change that?
What's that?
In movies, in the back of an aeroplane.
We still watch movies and we will hopefully one day.
I know. It just makes me sad every time.
Theatres are the things I'm worried about.
Yeah.
I'm really worried about theatres because they're not open yet.
And you want to watch Tenet.
And well, yeah, I do. I don't know that I'm going to see it this year.
I think we'll see it in November. I don't think it's going to happen in July or August as they've been thinking. It's not.
Yeah, they still haven't officially moved it. Today is what, July the 17th?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they still say it's going to be on August the 12th, but I'm not convinced. Well, number one, movie theatres aren't even open in California. So
I don't think they're open anywhere, right?
I don't think they're open anywhere.
Well, I think they were allowed to open, but they didn't. AMC said they were going to bring up things at the end of June, and then they moved it to the end of July, but then we have had further lockdown, so yuck. But still, home's not been bad. There has been
a plethora of content.
Yeah, this is kind of a smorgasbord episode with things that we've been watching in
new
various
stuff.
Ways, various content streams, and I guess, you know, we should make sure we point out which source, because we've been watching Netflix, Disney Plus, Hulu, probably Amazon's
Apple TV.
Streaming Apple TV Plus. So it's getting confusing.
YouTube.
And, you know, I think they're realizing that that's where the future is. So now all the other players are starting to invest, big, like, you know, the new, which I don't think any of us have seen yet, the new Tom Hanks movie is being released exclusively on Apple Plus. The new
Greyhound.
Yeah, Greyhound. And then the new Adam Sandler movie is released only on Hulu and so forth. And Hamilton was released only on Disney Plus. And they want to bring in, you know, the viewers. If you want to watch this, then you have to subscribe. So
I did actually hear a rumor. It was just a rumor, but I think it was more kind of hypothesizing about how something like Tenet, which is a $200 million investment, could at least, you know, bring in sizable dollars, and they're saying they might tie it to something like an HBO Max subscription for 6 months. So instead of just buying HBO Max, you know, for a month and doing the free trial, because a lot of people are being sneaky, right? They're trying to pilfer the content by doing a free, you know, and we're not guilt free when it comes to that, but
yeah,
it's mainly to avoid like subscriptions. You know, death by subscription, because that's the thing that you worry about with all these different services. But yeah, no, they were saying Tenet could be done simply, you know, could make its money by saying, if you want to watch it, get HBO Max, but you're locked in for 6 months, and that would bring in the kind of dollars that they might see from theaters.
Yeah, I think it was something like you pay $30, which when you think about it, if two people go and watch a movie, we used to pay $30 easily.
Yeah.
So you pay $30 and then you watch it on HBO Max or whatever, and then you can cancel the next day, but you're going to lose your $30, or you might as well just keep it for 6 months. So, I mean, it seems not that tough, you know, it's not that bad a deal for viewers.
No. I mean, I don't mind paying $30 for like a blockbuster film. I mean, you know, there is something funny about clicking buy. Like, I think we've bought a couple of movies now.
I know, it's so weird.
There's the resistance, right? And I,
especially for me,
Rashmi feels it more than I do. I'm used to buying digital content because I'm a video gamer, so you know, I will happily pay, you know, $50, $60 for a video game to download to console without ever receiving any physical media for it. But for a lot of people, there is a real like And I think the challenge with the movies is there's so much other stuff that you could be watching at any given time. When you make a choice to spend $20 on a movie, which what we watched, The King of Staten Island, right? That was the one that was $20.
Yeah, but the irrational part of that, Joe, is that we you know, pre-COVID, we used to walk up to the cinemas and pay that much money or even more.
Oh yeah, like, to buy movies.
Yeah, but somehow I'm as guilty. But when I have to click it on my computer screen, somehow it feels like, really, do I need to pay $12? Do I need to pay $15? You know, maybe I can watch these 20 other movies I have lined up in Netflix instead. Yeah. So it's a weird proposition.
So it's interesting you say that, Yazdi, because before we click the button for The King of Staten Island, we should probably mention. The discussion we had was, well, hang on, you know, exactly what you said. You go up to a window and you do that, and it's not like you can't afford it, blah, blah, blah. And I said, there's something about the experience that you're paying for in a theater, right? At home, you haven't got all the big lights and the sound system, and much as it's very good at home, somehow it feels like that money is paying for the experience and the popcorn and the staff and the AC, etc. I don't know. I think it's a false narrative, but
I think Yazdi really nailed it with his comment, which was there's so much other available content
that's free that you're already paying for.
That picking this movie, like if you wait 3 months, you'll get it via one of the free services or one you already pay for anyway.
That's true.
Anyhow, so there's a lot to talk about still. There's, you know, we keep discovering like little sources and pockets of movies like iTunes. I always forget iTunes as a service. If you have an Apple TV, there's a movie store there and you can dig around. They have like
really special, good movies.
But they also have like special deals. They call it movies you may have missed or something like that. And you can rent them for 99 cents or you can buy them for like $5. There's
Farewell was there. Yeah, really
the Farewell
good stuff.
Was a 99 cents rental. Like, that's got to be the best dollar you can spend on anything this year. That's insane. A movie of that quality for rent, you know, for an evening rental for 99 cents. I mean, oh, no brainer. There's some really great stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So, yeah, this is, I guess, the new normal for now. And, you know, we're kind of adapting to it, right, Rashmi? I mean, you know, there was at first, for me, I won't call it a depression, but there was definitely this like, I miss the movies. Why can't we go and watch movies? But, you know, you can still watch great content at home and feel like happy.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, I do still miss the theater environment, but we watched a couple of premieres now on Netflix at home.
On a Friday night.
And we do, the key thing is actually doing it, making an event of it. So saying, tonight we're going to watch a movie, and it restores some of that discipline that you have, because otherwise you just sit down on the couch and you flip through channels and you watch random things and
your evening's gone, and it's like every other evening that week.
So you kind of make an event, right? You know, this Saturday night we're gonna get some, you know, Grubhub, DoorDash, whatever delivered, and we're gonna watch a movie, and this is that, and that's gonna be our evening. So I think that's the way to do it for us.
What's for tonight?
Greyhound and
Indian.
There you go. She's decided already.
Yasti, what are you gonna
Greyhound
have?
And what?
Indian food.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm gonna watch The Truth and Mexican.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
And that's if we don't pollute you with the Krispy Kremes, because today is the birthday of Krispy Kremes, and if you buy 12, they'll give you 12.
Okay.
Yeah, yes, he's not convinced. Yeah, we touched that before the podcast. And
yes.
I almost threw him off the line because Yazdi
doesn't like donuts.
Well, it's not that I don't like them. I just don't crave them. Like, remember in New York when we had gone for Tribeca, there was that amazing place.
Oh, that was good. Yeah.
But they had those giant donuts on the wall.
That's right. Remember, with the lights really on fancy them? Ones.
Very fancy. I like those, but I never like
See,
wake
I said
up
you're
in the
fancy.
Maybe I'm fancy.
I think you are a fancy pants.
No, I would love
Yeah,
like...
you're fancy pants. Yazdi fancy pants. That's it now.
That sounds like the name of a band.
I don't know. I mean, like when you go to Portland, everybody
Do you ever eat McDonald's?
No, but I have like In-N-Out all the time.
Oh, see, fancy pants.
Why? Okay. In-N-Out is just that's like McDonald's. It now.
What were you saying about Portland? Because Portland's kind of a fancy place too, but
it's hipster.
No. How about Popeyes? I like a Popeyes chicken sandwich.
Yeah, see, he doesn't do the KFC.
Yes,
he doesn't do the KFC. Yeah. He's doing Popeyes.
Maybe
Popeyes.
I should stop talking. Have you had the Popeyes chicken sandwich? It's so good.
Is that the one that people were getting murdered over last year or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
no,
so.
I haven't. Is
no,
it, is
we
it,
haven't.
Is it really so good?
It is really so good.
And you are a bit of a connoisseur over chicken sandwiches. I know that.
Yeah, I do like a good, perfectly cooked piece of chicken.
Right.
No sexual
now
connotations.
I'm getting really hungry.
You can tell
donuts,
that it's 5:30 on a Friday night.
Yeah.
We're done with work. We're dreaming about food. So
that's right.
Why don't we record this podcast before
quickly
we lose every listener?
Yes.
That's tuned in. All right. So a lot to talk about movie-wise. I guess we should start with the order that I introduced them. So The Old Guard. Rashmi, you want to tell us about The Old Guard?
Yep, so a covert team of immortal mercenaries are suddenly exposed and must now fight to keep their identity a secret, just as an unexpected new member is discovered. So this is directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood, and you may know her from films such as, she's done a lot of TV, actually. And
Beyond the Lights.
That's it, yeah. And she's done, like, a couple of episodes of this and a couple of episodes of that. So you'll know her if you look her up. It's written by Greg Rucker, who actually based this on a graphic novel series, which was illustrated by Leandra Fernandez. And I knew nothing about this going into the movie. And then it has quite an impressive cast, led by Charlize Theron, Kiki Lane, Matthias Schoenaerts, mm-hmm. Marwan Kenzari, Luna Marinelli, Chiwetel Ejiofor's in here, Hannah Harry Melling, amongst a few others. So, Yazdi, what did you think of this?
So I've heard kind of mixed reviews, and I like you, Joe, I don't seek out reviews, but I happened to be reading some articles which said that Netflix is going to be dumping this movie, which had been filmed for a while. The filmmakers were dumping the movie on Netflix, and so I was a little tentative. Now, mind you, like many reviewers have said, I am always there for any movie where Charlize Theron kicks ass. I mean, she has really started to corner this market. It began with Aeon Flux a long time ago, which bombed, but then she kind of reestablished herself with Mad Max Fury Road, and then came the Fast and Furious movies, then came... what's the other one? So she's been doing a whole bunch of
didn't she do like Blonde something?
Atomic Blonde. Absolutely adore. Yeah,
that was the one that made me think I could never change in an airport toilet like she could and look that glamorous.
She was quick, yes. So I'm always there for Charlize Theron kicking ass, but even by those, so I watched the movie with a bit of trepidation and a sense of tentativeness, but I was just so delighted by the whole movie. I like everything about it, and we can talk more about it. I like this movie for what it does not do more than what it does do. And considering that this is based on a graphic novel with a premise which sounds very, very similar to, you know, the X-Men and, you know, Fantastic Four. These are for a group of people who find out they have extraordinary ability. In this case, they are immortal, and how they deal with the world around them. So considering that that premise is not exactly the most fresh, just the treatment of the material and every decision it took along the way, it kind of avoided one landmine after the other and made it to the finish line with flying colors. I really love this movie.
Joe.
Nonsense. So, no, I mean...
Don't be that person, Joe.
So, no, I mean, it's actually a fun action movie, but I think it walked into many landmines and had various appendages blown off.
But did
and
you
damaged.
Like it or not?
So, look, I mean, yes, it's a fun action movie. But I'm really frustrated with the cliche of the mad scientist, you know, the evil pharmaceutical corporate bad guy. I'm a person that plays a lot of video games. I just said that. And that's your stereotypical, you know, mission in a comic book. But really, is that as much as we had? So it was fun. Don't get me wrong. It was engaging. It's a great Friday night movie. And it's on Netflix. You've already paid for it. So just watch it. But, you know, it's not what it could have been, and I think that's ultimately what frustrates me about this, is that there, I feel like there's untapped potential in these characters, in this story. I wanted it to be more.
Gobbledygook, don't listen to Joe. This yes. is amazing. I love this movie so much, and I don't know if it's just because we are missing cinema or, you know, it's been difficult being at home, but this is such a fantastic escape. This kicks ass. I mean, Charlize, I'm hit or miss with Charlize Theron. Like, I didn't like her in Bombshell, and I loved her in Tully, but, you know, sometimes she's hit or miss for me. I didn't love Mad Max Fury Road.
Young adult.
This young adult missed it for me.
Oh, so,
I know. Shut up, Yazdi.
This, you're committing blasphemy.
I know. But you don't like donuts. So
that's true. I'll yes. be quiet.
Ouch.
So, but I love this movie. I think this is just, I agree with what you're saying, Joe. It's just got trope after trope, right? It's always the bad English man who's going to be the baddie. But despite all of that, it's just so fun and it's focused. And it's not really about them as a group. It's not an origin story. It's just about them doing a mission. And how they do that mission tells us so much about who they are and what's happened before. And I love the fact that she is so kick-ass. She's got such amazing girl power. I love this movie. And who's the other lady? Kiki Lane. She's amazing too.
She has so much heart in
the movie. This is such a great movie. I would recommend this to anyone.
Yeah, why I bring up the X-Men and the others is because, you know, X-Men used to be really good, and I know, Rashmi, you're a fan of it, but it got really exhausting very quickly.
It did, yeah.
Because maybe they should have just stopped when they did, but I think, you know, the movie has none of the trappings of your typical superhero movie. There is not people in spandex. There isn't, like, you know, the end of the world. And, you know, it's everything is kind of smaller in scope. And at the end of the day, it's just about a group of people who are trying to do their best, and they just happen to have the ability to not die.
Yeah.
And even that is kind of challenged eventually. But so, and each of the characters had a lot of depth. Like, Charlize Theron didn't seem falsely, you know, just badass. She had a lived in exhausted feel to her, and her character is supposed to be exhausted because she's been dealing with
she's like 6,000 years old
or something like that. Yeah. So, and you know, every single character, I mean this is the first movie, I hope there's a sequel, we'll talk about it more, but I kind of got a sense for every one of the characters. And the one, Kiki Lane, she looked kind of familiar and I couldn't kind of place her. And then I looked her up on IMDb and she was the female lead on If Beale Street Could Talk.
Ah, that's right.
And she played this really quiet, demure girl who's blossoming under love. And her character here could not be more different. And I think just like, you know, the Wonder Woman, the whole Wonder Woman franchise was re-energized by, you know, the way it was treated by a female director. I think having a female director here also helps. Now, mind you, I'm not going on some rant about men versus women. I mean, I loved all the Marvel movies, and the majority of them are made by men. But I think every once in a while, or even half as many times, if you allow this other perspective on it, you can really get a lot out of it. Now, on my notes, I have this written here that the bad guy even looks like Martin Screlly, you know, a pharma bro, the guy who went to jail. He physically looks like him. So I think that was like a bad move. And maybe that comes from the source material, because that's just, you know, grabbing the low-hanging fruit. You know, yeah, sure, the bad guy happens to be this evil pharma CEO. So I really did not, you know... I mean, that plot structure was used in Alien like 30 years ago, if you think about it.
And the recent remake of The Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, and you know, even his company, which is called Merrick, sounds too much like Merck. So, you know, it's like, again, I don't know if it was these filmmakers or the original content in the graphic novel, but that part I wish they would have redone. But overall, I thought it was more personal, more direct, and less bombastic than, you know, the typical superhero movie, which is why I really loved it.
Yeah, no, I was deliberately harsh because you two were gushing, but I think the movie, it worked. It does work very well. I mean, it's very nicely paced. It never feels exhausting, which many of these movies kind of fall into the trap of having, you know, excessive, you know, bombastic, you know, building, crushing, you know. I think the thing that I guess what I'm trying to put my finger on what put my nose out of joint when the movie started, and I think I didn't understand the fantastical nature of it for a good like 15 minutes into it, and it opens, yeah. And then it opens with something that's not explained,
yeah,
and then you have to kind of put it together, and I think ultimately, being the simpleton that I am, I found that structure a little frustrating because I'm like, I don't understand what's happening here. Like, why is it? And so as it starts to reveal itself, it made more sense. But I think initially I was like, what? This doesn't. I've been given no information.
You weren't concentrating because I got it immediately.
Joe, that's how all Christopher Nolan movies start.
I know.
You're just dropped into these characters and you have to figure them out. But I think it's a deliberate device where I think, and I even hazard, I hope people watch the movie before they listen to our podcast because we may have said so much. Because I think if a typical person just starts watching this movie thinking it's an action movie, it's only after the first 20, 30 minutes that you realize, oh, it's an action movie, but it's in this genre. So it deliberately withholds that information, and then you find out what's going on here, and then you realize, oh, you know, this is what's special about these people. So, and I was one of those. I did not know anything about this before I started watching it.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah.
I think unlike you, where I think it drew you in, I think I was just like scratching my head and thinking, you know, I don't get this, but okay, you're right. It's an artistic choice, and I need to.
So here's what I think I particularly love about the movie and what resonates with me, and it's kind of what I liked about An Interview with a Vampire. It's about the burden of not dying. And in essence, you know, wouldn't it be great if you could be immortal? I sometimes think about that, and I think about, as I grow older, I think about mortality a lot. Mm-hmm. It's very depressing. But anyway, that's not what this podcast is about. I really like the way the material's handled in this whole... It's something that never really leaves you as a viewer, right? This huge burden of not being able to die. The burden of that. And I think the way it's captured, the way, especially I think Charlize Theron's character has to portray that, is quite beautiful. And like that dilemma that a vampire faces, and we've seen those in vampire movies, when the new one comes along, again, the sort of the realization of what's about to happen or what's happening is quite beautiful, I think. And that sort of old guard bringing in the new guard, and that whole unraveling of that relationship between the Charlize Theron character and the Niall character. Yeah, I just love this. I can wind this up if you want.
No, I want to comment on that, and then you can. I mean, there are two things that I really liked about this movie. Well, three, but so I really like the fact that, like you said, that the movie develops an unexpected weight in its last act because of exactly what you said, because it deals with this whole issue of mortality. And we are not used to this in a comic book movie because everything is so fantastical and, you know...
And they have powers.
Yeah, and they don't have high stakes. But to think that if you live forever, everybody you love is going to eventually die and pass on, and you continue to live, and how do you deal with that? You know, Benjamin Button dealt with that as well. And I think there is a kind of a reveal in that third act about the Charlize Theron character, which really gives the movie a lot of emotional heft, which I admired. It, even as it's heading to its inevitable climax, there is a melancholy about it, which I really admired. The second thing I really admired, and I think this comes from the source material, is that the diversity, you know, these, you know, this group of people, these misfits, and you know, I think more than anything else, the movie really taps onto the otherness. If you are some other in the world, how difficult it is to adjust with it. And so these ragtag group of people who really don't know each other and get together every action movie. I like their diversity. One of them is a, you know, Middle Eastern guy. And, you know, he, by the way, was the bad guy in the Disney adaptation of Aladdin.
Yes.
You know, one of them is Matthias Schoenaerts. One of them is a French guy. Nile is an African-American woman. And then there's Charlize Theron. It's not your studio-favored boardroom group of people that you would pick up, you know, as a group of superheroes. So I really admire that they went with relative no-name actors with very different ethnicities, and kind of it feels more modern because of that. And then the third thing I really liked about the movie was its soundtrack. I really, really loved the soundtrack. It just had me, I mean, I very seldom like take a note to go to iTunes and check out the soundtrack, and I did for this one.
All right, so why don't you wind yours up then? You give a score.
Yeah, I love, the more I think about it, the more I like the movie. The last act of the movie is set in, and I'm not giving anything away, set in this lab, and it's kind of high stakes, but it's not like, you know, the whole universe is going to collapse if they don't save this little stone or something silly like that. Charlize Theron must be in her 50s, but, you know, she makes it seem so easy and so believable, and I am so there for a universe where she is, you know, an action hero. I think everything that's wrong about Hollywood is with its, you know, horrible, horrible allegiance to sequels and just churning them out one after the other. But this was, again, the rare movie which ended, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to see these characters again. And it kind of, the way it ends as well, it kind of definitely leaves the door open for more continuation. So, you know, at a time when we have so much superhero fatigue, for somebody to take on the superhero concept and have a different take on it, a completely different treatment, is marvelous. I kind of feel like how I felt with the Spider-Man, Spider-Verse animated movie.
Do you mean
movies.
That Marvel-less?
Oh, yes. Marvel-less, yes. So a very, very, I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to an 8. But maybe towards the end of the year, if I don't see a better action movie, I may move that up to a 9. It's so much fun. It has depth. It has great action sequences. I can't find anything wrong with it. Go watch it. My only complaint is I wish it had a better title. The Old Guard makes me think like it's a movie about Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, and yeah. Jason Statham.
And Jason Statham.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not. Okay, Joe.
Look, I mean, this was fun. I'm not going to beat up on it more than I have. It was definitely a very, very slick, well-produced action movie. The sound, you mentioned the soundtrack, Yazdi. I really enjoyed the sound design. I think, mm-hmm. it really took advantage. And, you know, we don't have like a state-of-the-art home theater or anything. We have a decent setup. And it really, to me, felt immersive in a way that a lot of movies don't, so I really enjoyed that. Little irritated by the cliches and Yazdi, all the things that you loved about the movie's deliberate diversity. Sure, that's really nice to see, but it really did feel like a checkbox list of we need to have one of those, one of those, one of those, one of those. So, you know, again, that is maybe by design. I would love to have seen some integrity behind the choice, in the sense of we still don't, you know, the movie leaves a lot of questions unanswered, which is great. That sets us up for sequels and prequels. But overall, 7 out of 10, I did have fun with this one, and I can really easily recommend it to anyone and everyone that needs something on a Friday night.
Yeah, I love this. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, and Gina Prince Bythewood, I think she got famous first for directing Love and Basketball. That was a movie which came out, at least 15 years ago. And then she did a movie a couple years ago, or maybe 5 years ago, maybe longer. It's called Beyond the Lights, and it has Gugu, my favorite Gugu Mbatha-Raw, playing a pop star. It almost predates, A Star Is Born. And it was again, she took that familiar story and made such a good film out of it. So I'm hopeful that the success of this movie allows this filmmaker to make more films.
Talking of which, Yasti, I did a Q&A with Gugu, and I took a photograph for you, which I forgot to send.
That's what were you waiting for? The end of the world?
I forgot.
Did you tell Yasti about the Q&A?
No, because he couldn't join. Oh, he's not part of Film Independent.
Yasti.
Yasti?
This is a deep violation. I know Yasti loves him some Gugu.
She's English.
Yeah,
she's British. I'm going to send you the picture right now.
Yeah.
She did that movie Belle, which I don't think we've seen.
Yeah, we didn't manage to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember that movie, was it a Tribeca that we saw? It had, it was based on the life of this guy in Britain, this actor in Britain who was into gangs. And yes, he eventually... It was a very British movie, and Kate Beckinsale played his mom. Do you remember that movie? Yeah, same movie. Well, Gugu was in that movie as well, and she had a flawless British accent, and that's when I realized, oh, wow. Yeah, Rashmi's showing me the picture of Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
I'm going to send it to you right now.
Yes, Instagram it, Rashmi.
I'll Instagram it.
Instagram it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
But anyway, let's...
Let's move along. So the next movie in our list is Hamilton. So, Yasti, you... must have signed up for Disney Plus, because that's the only way to watch Hamilton.
That is, and I finally, I would have rather signed up for Hulu than Disney Plus, but ultimately Hamilton did it. I'm one of the five people on the planet who had not seen any version of Hamilton before. And
like Joe and I as well.
Oh, okay. So I've been wanting to see it.
You're in good company.
And then when this came up, I could not resist it. It's such a good deal, and I think more people have watched it now on Disney Plus than they would ever have in the theater. And I think
we tried failed multiple times to get tickets for Hamilton. Just wasn't happening.
And for me personally, having seen it on Disney Plus, that only makes me more excited to watch a live show again whenever it becomes available. Yeah, I just like that. You know, the writing is so beautiful. I want to slow down every lyric and just hear it forward, because it goes by so quickly. And I love the fact that Lin-Manuel Miranda took this quintessential American story and kind of gave it his own spin on it. And there was so much about Hamilton that I did not know personally. I mean, when you think about the story itself, it's a little underwhelming, but the way it's played out, it's so energetic, and it breaks all the rules in that, you know, it does not go into one amazing, you know, set piece after the other. You know, it's the actors who are kind of the set pieces. They are the ones who are carrying the whole show. And the fact that, it's all sung in verse, and it's so witty and clever.
And it's done in hip-hop music style, right, Yasti?
Yeah. It's done in all hip-hop music. And,
Just a live show, right, Yasti? It's just a live show, right?
Yes.
A Les Mis where they put all the production around it. This is a show, presumably, that was shot with a live audience in a theater.
Okay. So it was done. Okay. I think they pieced together the footage out of three different live shows, and then they put it together. So it's not a film version. Lin-Manuel Miranda had an agreement with Disney to eventually make a film version, but I don't know what happened, and he finally gave in and allowed Disney Plus to actually show just the film version of the live show. And I think one of the advantages of the film version of the live show is that the camera gets so close to these characters, so you know, if you're sitting in a theater, even though you are watching live performers, you may not see the crease on their face or the little smirk or what have you. And the camera focuses on different people at the right time. So even though somebody else is singing, the camera will be on somebody else's reaction to it. So it's very, very smartly filmed. And, you know, I think this is how you make history interesting. I mean, there is, you know, King George at the time was this absolutely crazy person. And, you know, it's fascinating to watch what actually transpired and how this person behaved. And so it was great entertainment along with education, and the songs are amazing. And, you know, to the extent that I saw these people and I'm like, I'm sure nobody else can rap like this person. Nobody else can play this character again. They kind of make those characters their own. So I'll probably watch it again on Disney Plus just because the music is so catchy.
Maybe we'll bring the donuts.
Yeah, we could do a donut Hamilton party. Hamilton and donuts would go well.
Socially distanced.
They're both quintessentially American. So,
did you hear about the censorship? Because it was censored. Yeah, apparently there was a little bit of controversy because Disney Plus is ostensibly aimed at being family friendly, and Hamilton can have some strong language, and there was three instances of the F words in the original stage play, and they had to cut two of them. And so what was funny was they spoke to the original writers about this, and they said, well, we couldn't give two fucks, which I thought was kind of funny.
That's very funny.
But yeah,
which is so bizarre.
Did it feel sanitized in any way? Because I don't know much about it. There was just I read an article all about how there was some uproar in that they had to edit it at all. You know, they use the F word very sparingly in the play, and so, you know, it may have pulled a couple of punches.
I mean, I think the language is actually very spicy. It's not explicit, but it's pretty, you know, it's pretty spicy. But I mean, you know, like a 10-year-old has never heard the F word before, even within their own home.
Yeah.
So,
but it's Disney, and that's the thing.
It's so childish, but
it's Disney.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if I have to pay $200 to go watch this, it's so great that with just a Disney Plus subscription, you can watch them up close singing, you know, with the best voices. And this is the original cast. They have all separated now. So, you know, David Diggs and Philippa Sue and Lin-Manuel Miranda and Leslie Odom Jr. and all of these, they've all gone on to do other things, other movies, other musicals. This original cast doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't seem like they're all going to get together anytime soon. So to watch the original cast filmed up close is quite a treat. So I can understand why this is considered genius. I was like, what's the big deal? You know, but now I get the big deal. It's all in the writing. And okay, I put it all at the feet of Lin-Manuel Miranda for writing this amazing...
Terrific stuff. And are you going to keep Disney Plus for anything else, or were you just kind of doing the Hamilton and then bailing? Because you have to pay, right? They took away the free trial for Hamilton.
Yeah, they took away it's $7. It's $6.95.
I mean,
and there's
the price
of
a soda at a movie theater.
Yeah. And there's also a Hulu Disney combined, which is like, I think, $35. You can get both of them with live TV and all this. But I just did the... So I've paid at least for a month, and I intend to just go and see if there's any other movies. They have
The Mandalorian.
I should check out The Mandalorian. And they have
Baby Yoda.
Yes, Baby Yoda. I have to check out Baby Yoda and find out what that fuss is all about.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the Pixar movies are there. All the animated movies are there. All the Marvel movies are there.
Do you think I wonder if Mulan will be released there. I'm really sad. That's the one I was really looking forward to. I think that's one of my favorite Disney movies. And, you know, remember the live action was coming out.
And I've heard great things about the live action.
I know. I wonder if it's going to come out there. Okay, let's
move it along. So thank you for that, Yazzie. So Rashmi, you're up next with The Babysitter's Club, which is a Netflix series.
Yep, so...
Do you want me to introduce it?
Yeah, why not, Yazdi?
So The Babysitter's Club is a is released right now as a one season show on Netflix, and curiously it is in the top 10 most watched content on Netflix right now. It's number 10 as of today, and it's a PG-13 rated kids TV, a show primarily aimed for kids, and it's based on N.M. Martin's beloved books called The Babysitter's Club, where a girl gets together with a group of similar girls and forms a club. And the whole point of that is, you know, that they want to set up a babysitting business together. And it's, I guess, about the friendships between the, between these girls. And I know that there are 10 episodes. They're all 20 to 25 minutes long. So pretty quick viewing. The show stars Sophie Grace, Momona Tamada, and Shea Rudolph. So Rashmi, you saw all of these?
Thank you to those people at Netflix who gave me an early viewing of this. Look, I grew up loving things like the Disney-fied Boy Meets World, you know, all those Full House type serials. And so this is very sweet. It is aimed at the tween audience, but if you're a parent, I think you'll kind of have fun watching it. It's pretty diverse. It covers a nice range of, you know, interesting topics about growing up, coming of age, but it's funny. It's, I would say, more girly than, it's more gender biased towards girls. It's not chick flicky in any way, but it's about, you know, four or five girls who get together and kind of put this fun babysitters club together. But I think what I loved about it was, look, they're all very watchable. I kind of sat down. The cat woke me up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and I had this in my queue waiting, and I literally watched all of them back to back. It's that simple. And they're just fun. You know, you remember your childhood, and it's got some nostalgia, but it's modern day. And again, like I said, what I really liked about this was it's got Alicia Silverstone in it as the mother. Huh. And she's not so far from her Cher character in some ways. It's got that cuteness. It's sweet, I would say. Sweet and harmless, and it covers some difficult topics. You know, aging grandparents, diversity, mixed blended families, divorce, illness, even some childhood diabetes is thrown in there, and each one is covered not in a pretentious way, but in a way that probably would be a great conversation starter if you had kids of that age.
Very good.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah, I didn't really watch it, but again, you know, as is the case, I often sit down while Rashmi is watching something, and you know, I didn't find this compelling for me. It wasn't aimed at me, but I thought it was very well executed.
It was so not aimed at you.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know,
so not aimed at the Chris Nolan fan in the room.
The nearest comparison to it is the Never Have I Ever that we watched recently, but it's aimed squarely a couple of years younger than Never Have I Ever, right? It's not as sharply written.
Correct.
And it's not about the specific world of one character. But look, I mean, if you've got young teens, they'll lap this up. It feels very easy and enjoyable,
very
lighthearted
easy.
Enough, and nice, lots of charm from the characters.
Fun, right? Adult characters too. You know, often the adult characters get left behind. I think this had some quite fun older characters. You know, the parent people who were the parents, and good stories around them as well.
Next on our list is the movie Queen. So this is a 2014 Hindi movie, and I'll read the description of it. Rashmi, you watched this as well.
I think you've seen this a long time ago, right?
So the log line for it is, dumped by her fiancé, a sheltered young woman decides to go on her honeymoon to Europe alone, embarking on an exhilarating journey of self-discovery. So I kind of watched this one too, but really, you know, you watched it from start to finish with a view to really kind of talking about it on the show. So Rashmi, why don't you tell us about Queen?
Again, this is, if you have nothing better to do, I watched it on a school night. I put it on and I had a smile on my face from start to finish. There is a beautiful pre-wedding scene. It starts with, you know, a young woman who's about to get married and she's having a big party, as people do, her big fat Indian wedding. And it's so joyful. And it reminded me very happily of, you know, some of the events for our wedding, Joe. Super fun. Just a super fun movie about, you know, discovering who you are.
Yeah, and I think...
And it's so diverse, right? Like, it's got a really diverse cast and explores some diverse ideas for a Hindi movie. It's so cool.
It is very cool. I mean, I know this movie was the closing night or the opening night movie at the San Diego Asian Film Festival that year or maybe the next year. I think what's really good about it is that it's very entertaining, but it's this package of entertainment that has a lot of education built into it. So it's very progressive, and especially for, you know, Indian cinema tends to be very role-based, very, you know, archaic in the roles of men versus women, and there's not much, you know, room for, traditionally, but that's changed now. But this movie is very, very feminist in its thinking, and it's, but it never feels like you're being talked down to. It never feels like somebody's jamming this thing, oh, you should be progressive, you should be, you know, women should do this or whatever. It all happens very organically. And the lead actress, you know, she was in a lot of movies before in smaller movies, but then this really put her on the map, and she's quite remarkable here.
And she's not adorable to watch, very charming.
Yeah. And I think there is an authenticity to all of the interactions. I think the movie is very well written, like even how she reconciles with the guy, not reconciles, but, you know, how she kind of moves on with the guy who kind of jilted her at the altar. You know, that whole part is done so beautifully. And, you know, it's ultimately a thing about, well, bad things happen in life and you can either crumble or you can just move on. And if you can move on, only good things can happen from that point onwards. So it sounds corny even as I'm saying it, but it's just very beautifully done. And the movie was an unexpected big, big hit in India, and rightly so. I mean, you watch this movie and you realize why a movie like this can come out of nowhere and kind of win people's hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the parts that I saw, the performance of the lead, she had, like, charisma to spare. I think she very much carried the character, because I think there were some moments in there that were, you know, kind of, a little that could have been cheesy, but somehow she won me over with, like, being able to make Golgappa that were, you know, just loved by everyone in Amsterdam. Like, and that kind of thing can quickly irritate, because it's like, oh, come on. But she has, like, just such a an earnestness about the way she portrayed the character that you felt yourself kind of rooting for her. And yeah, so yeah, lovely movie, lovely movie. And it's, as the non-Bollywood aficionado within the group, I always have to talk about how accessible these movies are, because yeah, I think there is, you know, don't be put off by the fact that it's a Hindi movie. It's the kind of thing that could have come out of Europe. I mean, you know, it's not an all singing, all dancing Bollywood. So really good pick there. Yeah, Rashmi.
Next one.
I think we're going to talk about Homemade, Yazdi, and you have seen that and I have not. Neither has Rashmi.
Yeah. So I kind of stumbled upon this, I think, one night while I was working late at home. I wanted to watch a little bit of something before I went to bed, and you know, something not too long, like literally 15 minutes long, and this showed up on my Netflix feed, and it really intrigued me because of the names on it. So the whole premise of Homemade is that, you know, everybody is stuck at home during the quarantine and around the world, and what they've done is they've essentially told famous directors and filmmakers around the world to make a short film with the resources they have while they are quarantined. So Kristen Stewart directed a 10-minute movie with stars herself. Maggie Gyllenhaal, who needs no introduction, she made a movie with Peter Sarsgaard, who is her significant other. And these are all between 7 to 10 minutes long. Pablo Larraín, who made the movie Go and who made the movie Jackie a few years ago. He's done a splendid, 11-minute short about a man who's living in a nursing home, who video conferences somebody who he hasn't met in a long time and kind of professes his love for
and
her.
Yes, yeah. Are they around a similar theme, or are they just random vignettes?
No, I saw about six of them, and none of them are.
They're not all related. Contained.
They have a story. Yeah, they're not related, and they're not just, peacocks fluttering in fields either. Not that there's anything wrong with peacocks fluttering in fields, but they all have a narrative, and they all have a story, and some of them are a proper fiction story. Some of them are like a documentary. The filmmaker is documenting their own life during this time.
So Instagram Plus.
Yes, exactly. It's Instagram, because it's like 7 to 9 minutes. And I think the one that moved me the most was the one that's done by Gurinder Chadha. And Gurinder Chadha, we all love.
Bend It Like Beckham.
Who did Bend It Like Beckham. She did Bride and Prejudice. She did Blinded by the Light last year. She was stuck. She lives in London, and she was stuck with her, obviously, like many of us, with her two girls and her husband. And she had to deal with the quarantine, and she's just filming herself through it. And, she unfortunately had some deaths in the family, like a beloved aunt who passed away because of COVID.
Oh, no.
And it's sorrowful, but it's still kind of brings home, and it's very emotional for me, and that's why, Rashmi, I thought you should watch it, because it brings home the point that ultimately, the only thing that matters when everything else literally in your world falls away is your family.
Yeah.
And your traditions and cultures and how you lean fall back on that. And it's just this little homage to family from a filmmaker who is so grateful to have her two young girls with her, and how she spends her days and night, and it's just wistful and just stole my heart. The one that Maggie Gyllenhaal made, it was beautiful, beautiful little 7-minute short about a man who is living in this shack, and mysterious virus has wiped out the rest of civilization, and how this man is trying to deal with living in solitude, like not too far from where we are.
Total
right,
fiction.
Right now.
Yeah.
So,
and so Yazdi, can you dip in and out? So they're on Netflix.
They're on Netflix. They're all 7 to 11 minutes long. So you can just watch one and get out and watch
Perfect.
The other one. Yeah. So I would
now
really recommend
to watch,
it.
Suddenly.
Yeah. Anna Lily Amanpour, who made this amazing vampire movie a couple years ago called Woman Walks Alone at Night. She's an Iranian filmmaker. She has done this little 10-minute about just this woman driving with a mask around a completely isolated Los Angeles. And it feels like a dystopian movie about sometime in the future where the world is stopped. It's so beautifully filmed. So,
wow.
Just 10 minutes.
Do you know if everyone's just filmed them on like iPhones or?
A lot. So that's the great thing about them, is at the end of each of those little episodes, the filmmaker talks about who filmed it and what camera equipment they use.
I love it.
So they will say shot on VFX, whatever, shot on iPhone 10 with, my daughter as the, cameraman.
That's
this person is
great.
The gaff. Yeah.
That's like
it's inspiring,
Yeah.
I feel like I should make a 10-minute film on something. While
really,
I'm
the equipment is not a barrier anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Cool. Okay, and then let's wrap up, I guess, with
Gulabo Sitabo.
Yes. So this is a film that I saw mostly because it's got Amitabh Bachchan, and for those of you who don't know Amitabh Bachchan, he's probably the most venerated actor in all of Indian cinema. I mean, bar none. I mean, no, there's no more famous actor in the entire history of American cinema than Amitabh Bachchan. And anytime, he's now 70 plus years old, and anytime he's in a movie, it's a cause for excitement. And because of his celebrity and because of his, the culture of India is the culture of this actor. He's so intimately involved with, you know, the web and weave of Indian culture that he always makes movies which, on a variety of things, you know, but they always tend to be very, very commercial movies. And this is kind of his first movie that he made with a small independent filmmaker who is Shujit Sarkar. And the movie is essentially about, it kind of reminded me about The Last Man in San Francisco. Do you remember that movie?
The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Which is on Netflix now.
Which is on Netflix. That movie is a little weird, but I still love it. But this is about an old man who lives in this haveli or in this decrepit old mansion in Lucknow in India. And that place is going to, you know, it's so decrepit, it's going to fall down any minute. But he's a stingy, nasty, mean man. And it's amazing to watch this celebrated actor play a really, really nasty character.
I love that.
And essentially, he's making life hell for every one of the tenants that he has. He has several tenants in the house. And because of rent control, he cannot increase their rent. He's stuck by the law. And he will do anything to evict them so that he can bring somebody else in and charge them higher rent. So at one point, the movie becomes about this David versus Goliath story. About, you know, these people kind of trying to fight against this man, trying to get the better of them. But and on the other hand, it almost plays like a Dickens story about people raging against the system, and the system is ultimately going to get to them. It's not always successful. I think this is a movie of many, many ideas which are blended together. So I thought that I love the acting in it. I love the writing in it. Ayushmann Khurrana, who we've been watching, he was in Andhadhun, he was been in a lot of movies. He plays the leader of the rental people, the people who are living in rents. And it becomes kind of, the whole movie becomes a push and pull between these two men. But I think it kind of gets lost in terms of what kind of a movie it wants to be. And I will admit, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes long, but it kind of drags.
I was just going to ask how long. Yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of drags a little bit. But it just made me wistful for an earlier time in India when there was, you know, culture and wealth, and now, you know, being stuck in a very, very urban environment, this whole place is kind of, you know, has fallen to neglect, and it's kind of a reflection. These characters have fallen to neglect as well. So it's very unusual for, again, this an actor of this stature to be in a movie this small, but it's great. I mean, I did enjoy watching it. And it's called Gulabo Sitabo.
And where is it available, Yazdi? It's on Netflix?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a lot of viewing.
I was going to say, we've covered everything. Netflix, Disney Plus, Amazon Prime.
That's
lots
true.
Of stuff to watch.
And maybe next week we'll be talking about Hulu offerings.
Yes.
Because we do plan to watch some Hulu stuff.
Yes, we plan to do some Hulu.
Yeah, and one thing that we didn't cover, we remembered halfway through the show, and we'll definitely have to talk about in future, is The King of Staten Island, which was that was a kind of a feature rental release. So, you know, that was one that we did hit the buy
the button for
$20. We'll definitely talk about that soon. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate your support of us as we get through quarantine as well. We know it's not fun for everyone right now, but there's lots of great content. I mean, that is making life tolerable. And I'm really glad that the world went digital. Can you imagine being under quarantine like just 10 years ago? We wouldn't have had access to this kind of stuff at all.
Or having to go to Blockbuster.
I mean, you know, maybe you could have had like a Netflix you know, mailing type service. But yeah, it's, look at how spoiled we are.
Yeah.
So.
For sure, yeah. For sure.
All right.
And I'm going to end with a quote from The Old Guard, which I like so much. And
yes, go.
It's a thing with Charlize, the Charlize Theron character says, and she says, "We never get a say in how it ends. We never did, but we can control how we live." And I think that's It's very apt for the current. It's very apt for the current times.
I love that movie. Not to go into it again, but please, if you have Netflix, just watch. Such a good movie. So fun.
Definitely.
I might make you watch it again, Joe.
I would watch it again. Maybe I'll understand it better.
Yeah, maybe.
All right.
Yeah.
Too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.